Halloween community happenings, just so that everybody knows, if you're looking for something to do on Friday, they're kicking off tomorrow, October 29th from 3 to 5:30. There'll be trick-or-treating at each booth for Farmers Market. There's live music and magic with Andy Morris. And if you come dress in your Halloween costume, you'll extra prize opportunities. You can swing by the manager's booth to spin the prize wheel for everyone in costume. And starting at 4, there's a free pumpkin decorating. So pumpkins will be provided along with all the supplies to decorate the pumpkins. It looks like you'll get to decorate with temporary tattoos. And it's free to attend. And bring your wallet to stock up on all that fresh produce. The A-Town Halloween Block Party is happening this year on the 31st from 5 to 8 p.m. That's trick-or-treating in the downtown with participating shops from 5 to 7 p.m. There's lots of different locations that will be hosting activities. There's a costume contest at Gatherings Thrift, DJ and costumes at Poisoned Apple and Ancient Owl. There's a hay bale maze on Entrada, and a whole lot more. So if you're looking something to do on Halloween, come on down to the A-Town Halloween Block Party. And also don't forget, this Friday night is a home football game. It's the Orange and Gray Fridays. So there's Greyhound pregame deals downtown. Wear your orange and gray to receive discounts. Participating restaurants are Barley and Boar, Cielo, Streetside Ale House, Colony Sandwich Company, Wildfields Brew House, A-Town Chop Shop, Kula Hawaiian Kitchen and Wintery, and Decades Hi-Fi Lounge. So remember, wear that orange and gray and enjoy the downtown. Let's see. Oh, also Halloween, just to continue that theme, some community happenings, The Haunt, that's now through November 1st. Visit thehauntatascadero.com to find out more information on that. And then there's also the Halloween Spooktacular Lights and Sights. That's through Halloween night, and that's at 7720 Cortez Avenue. Thank you again to one of our retired city employees, Mark Russo, for putting on this event every year. Also, this weekend, Dia de los Muertos at the Central Coast Zoo. That will be November 1st from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. There will be themed crafts, cultural exhibits, special guests, and live music with DJ Rama, as well as delicious eats from Quesadilla Gorilla will be available for purchase. To find out more, please visit centralcoastzoo.org. Coming up is the 2025 Holiday Boutique. This is always a favorite. That will be at Pavilion on the Lake. That is November 8th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's a unique shopping opportunity to get some local made crafts and goods, and there'll be over 90 vendors to shop from. There'll be a Veterans Day ceremony at the Atascadero Veterans Memorial Foundation is hosting it at their Faces of Freedom Memorial. That's November 11th from beginning at 11 a.m., excuse me. The ceremony will consist of a flyover, colors presented by the Vietnam veterans, and accompanied by pipes and drums. And the speaker this year will be a Vietnam veteran. The Kiwanis will also be providing a barbecue lunch following the ceremony, and proceeds from that lunch goes towards maintenance of the memorial. Also, a reminder of more upcoming events in the month of November is the Colony Days Parade and the annual community celebration. That will be Saturday, November 15th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Following the parade, there'll be the Atascadero Fall Fest Carnival throughout the Sunken Gardens. And that weekend is also the Fall Fest, which is free admission. That's in the downtown Sunken Gardens. And that's November 14th through 16th on Friday. The event is from 4 to 10 p.m. On Saturday, the event is 12 to 10 p.m. And on Sunday, again, the event is 12 to 10 p.m. And that's following the Colony Days Parade. Just a quick update on the Santa Lucia pavement. The paving on the roadway segment between Portola and Cascabel Road is now complete. So the improvements there include new edges and driveway aprons. Paving began today on the roadway segment between Cascabel and Laurel, and that's expected to be completed by the end of this week. Please, if you're driving in the area, make sure you're planning for travel delays. Those could be up for from 15 to 20 minutes while the work is underway in the area. And then once that section is complete, travel delays will be greatly reduced. So we should hopefully see better traffic moving through Santa Lucia next week. And pending favorable weather conditions, the project's on track to be completed by Christmas. So that'll be a great Christmas present to everyone in the area. And just as a reminder, there's information on the city's website regarding the tree and shrub maintenance zone, 4 feet from the roadway edge and 14 feet from the roadway going up into the air. Please make sure if you have shrubs or trees on your property that you are maintaining that maintenance zone. And Public Works is getting phone calls on those. So please, please, please make sure you trim. If you have any questions, please let me know. And as always, information on city and city-sponsored events in the zoo and things to do in the city, you can find at visitatascadero.com. And for all city-related business, please check out our website at atascadero.org. Thank you, Council.
All right. Thank you, Laura. Does any member of the Council have questions? Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Thank you. I'm sure by now everybody has heard and probably seen pictures of the utility poles that were taken down. Can you give us an update on what that caused, what it's going to take to fix, and how long, and everything we need to know about it? Thank you.
Sure. I will let both our police chief, Suttles, and our public works director, DeBar, speak on that.
City Council, thank you very much for that question. Yes, that was a very exciting call. When it first came out, it was about 9:30 yesterday in the morning. It originally came out that there was some power lines down, and then that's not necessarily an unusual call to receive. However, when I started getting pictures back to my phone while I'm sitting in my office, and I see that there were a total, I believe, the final count, I believe, was about 9 power poles that had fallen into the roadway with all the lines down as well. You can imagine that that. For me, took it to a different level, because now you're talking about something that's it's already dangerous enough to hear power lines in the street, but for 9 power poles to fall into the roadway, especially on a 4-lane highway, I mean, that is an extremely dangerous situation. We were, in my opinion, very lucky. No cars at 9:30 in the morning were in that stretch of roadway, and this is almost 2 blocks of the length. That's amazing to me, and no pedestrians. So nobody was hurt. I think that the only vehicle that was struck was a parked vehicle, and it suffered relatively minor damage. So it could have been, and I know that this maybe sounds a bit cliche, but it could have been a lot worse. I think that the worst that we had was the simple fact that we were inconvenienced with traffic for quite some time. So that took place, at 09:30 in the morning, and we know crews are out there working and cleaning and fixing late into the night. When something like that first happens, there's a lot of people who respond: fire department, police department. We had a lot of different agencies out there. The CHP and the Ash Police came out and helped us. And a lot of that is because, we know that there's a lot to figure out. Where did this start? Where does it end? How far north? How far south? What does this affect? What exactly are we dealing with here? Once we figure out what we're dealing with, we obviously know what we want to accomplish, and that's to get traffic flowing, to clean up, to provide a safe environment for everybody. When we know that, we start asking ourselves, what resources do we need to get to our objective? And quite honestly, there was a lot of resources that were needed, for something like that. So we had to get all those people mobilized and moving. And we needed to shut down traffic. And to do all that took quite a bit. And we always start big. We shut down an entire ECR, both north and south. We shut down a lot of the side streets. Businesses were affected by this because people were not able to get to certain businesses. And out of the sake of safety, we kept that road closed until we knew what we were dealing with. And it turned out that we weren't necessarily dealing with power lines more so than communication lines. Most of those poles were owned by AT&T. And so that's good news, because it didn't affect very much. There was very little power interruptions at all in the area. I believe I was told some streetlights and things of that nature, but we're not talking about major outages that you might have thought would have come from that type of accident. Eventually we were able to get the southbound lanes opened. We were trying to get northbound and southbound lanes open, but it wasn't going to be able to happen in a safe manner. So we opted the southbound lanes were already unobstructed, so we left those open. At that time, people then were able to get to those businesses that were leased on the west side. So we apologize for any inconvenience to those businesses, but we wanted to make sure that safety was our main concern there. As far as the cause, there was an oversized trailer. There was a vehicle towing an oversized load. It was a module home being transported, and they caught a line. And once one started, it was a domino effect. I think a lot of people believe that, you know, this vehicle snagged a line and unknowingly kept driving and pulled all nine down. But it appears to be that it was a domino effect. One went and then those others followed. That person stayed on scene, gave a statement. We were able to conduct our investigation. And again, I'll close with, I'm just very, very relieved that there was no injuries. I think it could have been certainly with that much damage, definitely could have been some injuries. So I'm really, really happy that I can report there were not.
Not on, now it's on. For people pulling something, a load that's going to be particularly tall. So was this load taller than it should have been, or were the wires hanging lower than they should have been, or was there just a combination of both, or what is considered to be the cause of this besides the obvious?
And the answer to that is I don't know yet. And the reason why is because we've taken a lot of the information. We've done a lot of measurements, and I'm waiting for those reports. You know, the officer needs time to put all that together. And basically, as you said, that's exactly what we're concerned, not concerned. We're questioning as well. Was it too high or were the lines too low? I don't know the answer to that right now. I know it was an oversized load. So that's my first, you know, being the natural detective that I am, that makes me question that first, but we want to verify before we lay blame.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it.
I might just add real quick. I want to give kudos to AT&T and PG&E because this happened, as the chief said, around 9:30. By 8 o'clock this morning, they had all those poles replaced and the lines up, and they were working on cleaning up and getting the ladder lines done across El Camino. And by around midday, they were all done. So it's pretty impressive knowing that they had to cut out concrete, pull out the old poles, and put new poles on.
Thank you, Director.
Yes, thank you. That, I think, was a key thing. So thank you for that. Any other questions for the city manager? Nope. I did want to comment the Bovine Classic. I did attend the starting of that, and it was very impressive how many people, because when I got there, I don't know, quarter till, it looked like there were 200, and then by 8 o'clock there were 600 bicyclists just materializing out of everywhere, I guess. But kudos to Terry Banish for helping, you know, get those kind of events to our city. This is the fourth year, I think, and these folks frequently spend one or two nights in our hotels locally, and they eat at our restaurants, etc. It's a great addition to our community. So appreciate you helping to bring those kind of events here. Okay, with that, we will proceed to the community forum. Community forum is designed for persons wishing to address the council on any matter not on the agenda, but over which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. We would ask that you state your name for the record. And I have to note that the Brown Act prohibits the city council from discussing items not on the agenda, so we cannot have any in-depth discussion of anything people might bring up during community forum. We can, at our discretion, ask a question of staff or ask staff to get with a speaker afterwards. And community forum is limited to 30 minutes, after which we can either extend it or postpone the rest of the speakers to the end of the meeting. So with that, if you would like to speak at community forum, please approach the podium, and please don't wait for the speaker ahead of you to finish. Go ahead and line up if you would. All right, thank you. First speaker. A familiar face.
That helps. Good evening, Mayor Borbo and council members. My name is Jennifer Adams. I'm the CEO of Lumina Alliance. We're a nonprofit organization that serves victims of sexual assault and domestic violence throughout San Luis Obispo County. I'm here tonight because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and just wanted to share a little bit about what Lumen Alliance has been up to. I do want to start by recognizing the support of the City of Atascadero and this council. One of our two emergency shelters is located here in Atascadero. The city was instrumental in the purchase of that property and has over the years supported its upkeep. So we are very grateful for that. That house has been there for 25 years now. So, and lots of families have moved through it successfully. I also want to just thank and recognize Mayor Bourbeau was on my board of directors when we were RISE, which was prior to the merger that created Lumina Alliance. And I also want to recognize and thank Councilmember Susan Funk for her work with HSOC for the Housing Oversight Council, Homeless Services Oversight Council. Lumina Alliance houses about 130 people a year in our shelters and our transitional housing. And the affordable housing is a barrier for lots of our families to be able to move on and find safety in their lives. So it's a very important issue for us, and we appreciate the work there. So for over 40 years, Lumina Alliance has been a steadfast support of survivors of sexual assault and intimate partner violence and their loved ones. This past year, we answered 2,800 calls on our 24-hour crisis line, which was a 33% increase over the year before. We housed about 210 people, half of which were children. Our mission is to empower those impacted through innovative advocacy, healing, and prevention programs. We provide a 24-hour crisis line, advocacy and accompaniment, legal referrals, emergency shelters, transitional housing, self-sufficiency services, individual and group therapy, and a comprehensive prevention program. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and this year we're shining a light on the resilience of survivors and the often overlooked realities of intimate partner violence in our community. While anyone can experience domestic violence, some groups, including undocumented individuals, transgender people, and those living with disabilities, face unique barriers to safety and support. This month, we reaffirm our commitment to ensuring that every survivor is seen, heard, and empowered. Together, we're illuminating pathways to a future where all survivors have access to resources and the support they need to heal. Please remember, if you or anyone you know is experiencing sexual or intimate partner violence and needs help, to please call our 24-hour line at 805-545-888. 8888 and speak to one of our confidential advocates. In closing, I just want to, on behalf of Lumen Alliance's board of directors, staff, and volunteers, thank all of you and everyone in the community for doing what they can to create a safe, thriving, and equitable community. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jenny. And I want to thank you for the services you do provide to residents of Atascadero, both victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, and the work you do with our police department that is helpful in helping prosecute those crimes.
So. Chief Settles did a great job today at the League of Women Voters forum with the other chiefs and the sheriff. And I got to hear that, and I was proud living here in Atascadero. It was great representation.
Thank you very much. Okay. And if I may just take 1 second, I also wanted to, today's topic was on the undocumented immigrants, and really the message that we're trying to send is that we are an agency, and all the agencies here within this county are here to provide a service to all of our community, and whether they're documented or undocumented, our goal is to make people as comfortable as possible calling us when they need help. So when you're talking about some of these groups that may feel not comfortable calling law enforcement, I want them to know that we strive as local law enforcement within this county to be able to provide that service to everybody without judgment and without fear of us, asking about their documentation or whatever. That's not our concern. Our concern is safety.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Okay. Next speaker, please. Please go ahead.
Oh, City Council. My name is Linda Ikeda. Thanks so much for having a forum where we can speak about our concerns. The wireless industry, however, wants to take away this voice from us concerning wireless infrastructure. Last Friday, I sent you all an email about writing a comment on the FCC, Federal Communications Commission site, opposing docket 25276 that takes away all of our citizen rights regarding wireless infrastructure, allowing the wireless industry total control of cell tower placement and without our say. So the first email I had sent has this picture. It's a picture of several homes, and there's a maxi cell tower five homes apart, and that's too much radiation. That's not okay. Today I sent you an email with a link to the Children's Health Defense article, which you have in your hand. It is this one. You can quickly oppose this if you believe in keeping our right to talk. Quickly oppose this docket. Automatically sends emails to our federal representatives and FCC commissioners. This is very important since the public is just learning that cell towers need to be responsibly placed. Otherwise, people get hurt and sick. This has happened often around cell towers. In Massachusetts, 17 children and adults became so sick from a close-range cell tower that their Board of Health deemed their homes uninhabitable. We need to preserve local control in the face of wireless companies shamelessly prioritizing profits over people. They appear to lack any concern for the harm they cause and use lawsuits to get their way. Everyone listening, please share this idea widely. Contact all your electeds and write the FCC. A fast way to do that is to go to the Children's Health Defense, which is the article I gave you, Children's Health Defense website, and type in FCC moves to silence communities and flood the country with cell towers. This just takes a few minutes and a few clicks. Again, go to Children's Health Defense and type in the search engine FCC moves to silence communities and flood the country with cell towers. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Hello, I'm Janine Jacobs. I'm on the same subject. As you can see, we have adequate digital projects here. We have this screen, we have our cell phones at 4G, we didn't even need to go to 5G. Then they're going to go to 6G. And my friend here said that when they put in towers, they get approval, and then right after the approval, they raise the intensity by a large amount. So they're not really cognizant of our safety. They only want to get it to the point where they can actually control crowds with your cell phone. And so I think most of it is about surveillance. We did not need this. We do not need more towers. And now we are learning that they planted a tower like 20 feet away from where I had my headlights brushed. And those guys could get leukemia from that. And then they put a cell tower here at Benito. It was 100 feet. But they're not supposed to put it in within 1,400 feet. So they're being negligent. Who is controlling these people? Do you have oversight over where they install these? Did they have a permit? 1,400 feet is very conservative when it comes to safety. They only last about 10 years. So here we will have if this gets approved through the FCC, we will have only the United States government to speak to, FCC in Washington, D.C., as a single source of communication. You will not have any jurisdiction under this new law. So the public won't either, but it's very especially important to you because you won't be able to have any say in it. We do not want to centralize our power in a federal way or a global way. And these people with the tech, big tech, are associated with world global government. WEF, WHO. We want to stay away from that. We want to be decentralized so we have more communication of what we need and what we can manage. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, council and staff. Jeff Oslin, resident, in this beautiful city called Atascadero. Some of the staff and some of you folks on council are friends, are very good friends, but I want to keep true to my word of always keeping everybody here honest and informed. So I would start with the five of you up there are elected by our citizens to make hard decisions. And our last city council meeting, we had a council member saying they were not sure about making a very hard decision. You're elected to make a very hard decision. That's what you're in office for. So I would hope that in the future, you can remember that. The other one is when you're going to run a poll, after the fact, I think it should be done before if you want a straw poll. I don't think it does well to run on a very tough thing after the fact, especially when it's not localized to our city and you might get 80% or 90% or whatever in favor, but I just say it that way. When you come to cannabis, I would think that you probably have 60%+ in the city that would vote for it. And it only takes approximately 1,500 valid signatures to put anything on a ballot that would cost the city some money and not necessarily have things crafted the way our city would want it. So I think at the end of last meeting, it should have been done a little differently to where our city should have spent the money one way or another to craft an ordinance to either put on the ballot or a poll to see which way it makes sense. Because right now, if there's a petition drive, how it's written could be voted on and passed in, and we would lose a lot of control, especially with cannabis. So I hope you take that with great consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. I don't see anybody else approaching. Last call. Okay, well, community forum is now closed, and we will move on to management reports. Item G1, discussion of our draft 2045 Atascadero General Plan. And I will turn this discussion over to Mr. Phil Dunsmore, our Community Development Director.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. We are proud to present to you what we call Authentic Atascadero. Thank you. My microphone was facing the wrong direction. I could hear myself, but you couldn't hear me. Here we are. So proud to present to you the document, the draft document tonight. And we're going to give some background. We're going to tell you where we are with this process, where we're going to go with this process. And I'm going to keep underlining the word general tonight as well. Because what this is even though they call it a policy document, it's really generalized goals for the future of the city. And this doesn't mean these things are going to happen. It might mean these things should happen. And it might basically lead to things that we can implement later. So in terms of where we are today, I'll give you a few updates. essentially, I'd like to go through the draft plan. It's only been out there for a few weeks for the public to look at. We've gotten some great comments. We had a great open house last Tuesday, followed by a planning commission hearing. Had good turnout at the open house. It was really nice. Got a lot of good comments. I'll also talk about the next steps and where we're going. So in a complete sort of package, here's where we've been. It's been a couple of years now. We started out with a lot of outreach and an entire time period that we called Vision for the Future. Then we went on to the second series, which was Exploring the Possibilities. Then we went on to another series of open houses. Now we're in that final phase. We've really culminated to that phase four, getting that plan out there. There's been a lot of online and interactive surveys that have produced what you see before you tonight. We've had a lot of in-person surveys as well. What it's resulted in is not only the land use policies, but we've got the safety policies. We've got things even as detailed as noise policies. So we began in winter of 2023 with a whole background report that we call existing conditions. We went on to do a very comprehensive community engagement in the summer of 2023. That was at the Lake Park and Pavilion and several other locations. And then our council and our community created what we call True North statements, which are really visioning statements. Then we took those a step further later on to create the guiding principles. Then we brought that back to the community to create a set of alternatives. Now at this point, we've taken those alternatives and actually created the policy language and all of the final items that you see before you tonight. I'm going to skip through some of this because a lot of this is really just repeating what was on the previous slide. I didn't know this was in here. But essentially what we've done is go through a series of different workshops over time. This slide actually throws me off. I'm just going to skip that one altogether. Sorry about that. So what I'm going to talk about is Authentic Atascadero, the general plan and what you have before you tonight. There's actually 9 chapters. Now, keep in mind, several of these chapters are required chapters by the state of California, like the land use chapter, for example, the economic development chapter, the housing element. The housing element is a very separate one. That one is one that is on its own track. It is actually going to be pulled into this general plan, but we haven't updated that. That runs on its own 8-year cycle. And that will again be updated in a few years, but kind of runs on its own, even though it's a part of the general plan. Mobility, which is really circulation, recreation and open space, that covers our parks, our trails, public services and infrastructure, key element that covers things like our wastewater treatment plant and even some of our other infrastructure. And then we have our safety and emergency preparedness element. That will cover things like fire risk, flood risk, and things like that. Now, what I'd like to read to you is the vision statement that we had created for this general plan, and it's basically Atascadero provides opportunities for all residents and business owners to thrive. Our community-focused culture pursues investments in land use strategies that create a diversity of housing types, supports local businesses, improves all mobility modes, and respects our natural environment. Collective community actions improve conditions for current and future generations. Now, another section we have in here is called the big moves. And really, a way to summarize that is, these are the big, and I don't want to say a scary word, but changes that we would like to see in our community. And in general, this general plan does not change our community. It really stays true to what the name of the document is, which is Authentic Atascadero. It stays true to maintaining the character of our community, especially our west side and our rural neighborhoods. It stays true to what Atascadero is made of. It's a local place. It's a place that prides itself on our quality of life. So these big moves, they represent key land use objectives and strategies that help advance the True North statements, and the vision and guiding principles and the community's desires. A lot of what's in this plan is what we've heard not only from the city council, but from the community at large. And we've really tried to include that wherever we can. Again, creating a mix of housing types, attracting new industries and higher wage jobs. A lot of what I'm going to be talking about tonight is really getting that jobs housing balance to be improved. Right now, we're still a bedroom community. We're probably not going to change much from that, but we need to have at least enough of a job base here where our children can stay here and work if they want to, where we can avoid having to drive great distances to find employment, where we can actually go out for the evening here and have a good time. And I think we've actually made great strides in that as we are over the last decade. And then improving access, improving our network, our road system, our trail system, and then continuing to be able to address public infrastructure needs, be able to finance the public infrastructure, and be able to keep up with development. That is a critical piece of it. And lastly, ensuring fiscal sustainability. Now, there is a component here that we don't have for you yet. Keep in mind, we're still going to be taking comments on this draft plan for the next few months. But there's also a fiscal portion that evaluates how this general plan and its policies affect our fiscal sustainability for the future. Now, one of the key things everyone loves to focus on is zoning. What can I do with my property? What is the land use? What is going on? It's a major component, but that's not the entire general plan. It's definitely a significant piece of it. And as we look through and talk about some of the policies in land use tonight, keep in mind, again, these are land use policies, and they're different than zoning policies. And I often like to try and describe the two. The general plan sets the tone and is very general and visionary, while the zoning actually implements the general plan and actually creates the, I'll call it, municipal code, the policy, the actual thing that we shall do. Whereas the general plan is more along the lines of, we should do this if we can. And the municipal code says, we will do this, and here's how we're going to do it, and here's the details. So again, we're doing the general plan now, and the zoning follows that and implements this general plan. So I'm going to get into a little bit of what land use is. Really, what we have instead of actual land use categories, we're now going to be calling place types. And it's a softer way to describe each land use. It's basically defining the primary uses of the land and what we expect the character of those areas to be like. What we've done is we've reviewed the city's commitment to concentrate development where utilities already exist. We don't have the ability to dramatically expand our infrastructure, such as our wastewater infrastructure. So instead, the zoning's built around what's there. It reflects what's there in the built environment and tries to build upon that. We've also introduced a new zone called Innovation and Flex. Now, it's not brand new. It essentially replaces a lot of what is already commercial zoning, what is already commercial service and commercial park, and blends those two into something that reflects the trends that are there today. The roll-up door spaces, the light industrial. We also, with this general plan, want to continue Morrow Road as an office corridor, where we encourage medical offices to relocate to and basically strengthen that corridor as an office corridor that it's already becoming. And then looking back to downtown to continue intensifying the downtown as a place where we have entertainment, we have restaurants, we have mixed use, we have people living downtown. And the big shift that we've seen in the downtown just over the last 5 years with people living downtown has really accelerated that vibrancy. And this general plan wants to continue that by incentivizing ways to do that, introducing additional density, and introducing additional ways to essentially make that happen. And then lastly, refining uses in our industrial areas to focus on employment opportunities, lower intensity manufacturing, and sort of those indoor service-related uses. Because our industrial areas in Atascadero are so small and so limited, we do really underline the word indoor. We don't have a ton of area for outdoor land uses, outdoor storage. Those are probably the more controversial land uses, and that's why they're controversial. They're such limited space, it's very difficult to waste it with with land uses that do not produce things for the community. Here's the draft map. I'm going to get into greater detail with this as we have questions later on, because it's hard to see all of the land uses on this particular scale of map. In reality, it's very similar to what we have today. It preserves the entire West Side rural areas as they are today. It focuses commercial along specific nodes where there's intersections such as the Highway 41 and El Camino intersection, the San Anselmo and El Camino intersection and the Del Rio intersection, and then to the south at the Santa Rosa intersection. Those are the areas where you see the splashes of red color. The red color on the map is essentially a commercial zone, whereas the more, I guess on this map, they're almost a pink color, is a mixed-use designation, which today is commercial. And today we allow residential above commercial in those commercial zones, but we're actually being more directional about that and actually putting in place mixed-use zones where we can really be definitive about that. And then a little bit on there, you can see the innovation flex zones in the bluish colors along El Camino and a couple other portions of the city. And we can talk about that in greater detail later on. Economic development is a key component of any general plan, any community. There is an entire section that provides policies that talks about economic development. It really, the idea is it's there to facilitate a full range of goods and services in our community. Attracting new development, coordinating economic development efforts with local businesses and organizations, and really trying to take a long-range look at the city's fiscal condition. And what can we do from a land use perspective? What can we do from a policy perspective? And what can we do from an implementation perspective to continue to enhance our fiscal condition so that we can continue to provide the services we need and the infrastructure that we need to maintain a healthy community? Mobility is simply circulation, how we connect these areas, a critical key piece. Circulation and land use sort of go hand in hand. If you have rich land uses that have multifamily, that have commercial areas, you've got to have good access, you've got to have good transportation, and you've got to have multimodal transportation. You've got to have pedestrian and bicycle connections, and you have to have them safe. Now, in recent months, I won't even say recent years, but just in recent months, our downtown has dramatically changed from a mobility standpoint. And there's additional areas in Atascadero where we can continue to modernize our mobility and enhance the vehicle connections and enhance the pedestrian connections. We also need to continue maintaining an adequate supply of off-street parking, particularly in commercial, industrial, and higher density residential areas. And we have to keep going after funding to prioritize the Highway 101 interchange improvements in Atascadero. It's one thing we were not blessed with in the 1950s is a freeway that bisected our town. And today we still have the same overpasses that were built when that freeway was originally constructed. And as we move forward through time, those overpasses continue to be significant constraints to how we can continue to develop our community, how we can improve density, how we can improve our economy. So that will be something that we will need to continue to focus on as we move forward. And lastly, we need places to play. We need park and recreation facilities. We, you know, desperately need expansion of soccer fields, things like that. And there's certain ratios that we expect to put in place for parks as we develop additional residential areas. And as we move forward with new subdivisions and new housing, blending these things in and ensuring that we grow our parks and our natural resources at a rate that matches our population. Right now, we're at a good level, but in the future, we're going to continue needing to expand these areas. Luckily, in Atascadero, we have a lot of natural resources that we can take advantage of. The areas such as the Three Bridges Trail, the areas along the Salinas River, and our areas along our creeks. And again, this particular section also takes a look at encouraging the conservation and preservation of historical and architectural significance, which we have a lot of, such as the building we're in tonight, such as the Printery, such as our historic homes that we have in our community. Those are absolute gems. And there's policies here that further their preservation. Probably one of the more important things too is the public services that we provide. And there is policies here that help to ensure that new development can help to pay for its fair share of these infrastructure, these services, and that we have it keeping up with our development. A big project going on now that we've heard a lot about, of course, is our water reclamation facility master plan and how that responds to long-term growth. That has to be done if we're going to envision the completion of this general plan. A very significant thing for Atascadero and for any community is having safety and emergency preparedness. We are in an area that has a substantial amount of very high fire zones. We have a large area of our city that's under what we call our wildland urban interface, our WUI area. And we have a series of new policies that are being proposed in this general plan that speak to that. The safety element is a critical piece. It's a state required piece. And our fire team and our police team have helped us develop policies that respond to the next 20 years in that endeavor and will help us implement future code changes and future ideas that will move this along. There's the old fire station there, and as you know, we're well under our way for planning a new fire station to replace it. And so that's something we don't have to adopt policies on because it's already underway, but there's certainly a lot of other policies here we should look at. It responds to flood issues, it responds to noise issues, and every type of emergency that could occur in our community. Let's talk about next steps. Where are we? So tonight we're here at the council. Last week, as I mentioned, we had a great open house workshop. We had our planning commission hearing. Right now we're moving full steam ahead with our consultant team to work on the environmental impact report. It's kind of nice we don't have that with you here tonight because it's a big document that would take us a long time to review. So it's good to look at that, at this draft document separately, and then look at the EIR separately at a later date. We expect we'll have an administrative draft for staff to look at in the next month or two, and we expect to have a public review draft at the first of the year, we hope. And then that will have its own specific public review period before the council gets to view that and take action on it as well. Additionally, we're waiting for the draft fiscal analysis. We should have an administrative draft of that before the end of the year and have a public review draft early next year to look at. In terms of public review of those documents, we expect that to be basically early of next year, and we will do additional community engagement as those things come out. The EIR has its own state-mandated outreach that we'll have to do, its own what we call
what's the hearing policy for the
EIR? Scoping hearing, thank you, as we do all of that. And then finally, the grand finale, as we call it, adoption. And that'll include certification of the EIR and adoption of the general plan. Can't wait for that day. That's coming soon. It'll be here before you know it. But tonight, I think it's really key just to understand we're here to take comments on the draft. We can continue to amend it. There's still time to do that. And as always, I want to leave you too with the project website. But you don't just have to go to the website to look at the general plan. You can also come into our office. You can talk to us. We can even print you pages of this document. We have a printed out version at the counter for you to review. There's one at the public library. Now, I will tell you that the document is intended to be an online document. It's its own web page. So when it's printed, it's not as fun to look at as it is online. But we do have it printed, and we do have it available like that. And I'm going to end it there. I'm going to go back to that page, leave it there, and basically be ready to answer the council's questions, and then look forward to hearing from the public as well.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dunsmore. I am going to ask you to do a little more explaining about something. You mentioned zoning, and of course, there's a whole separate zoning ordinance that implements these things, but the guidance we provide through the general plan is crucial, foundationally, you might say. But I think for members of the public, zoning is probably the most important aspect of the general plan update. In particular, folks wondering, okay, how how does this affect, you know, my property or my neighborhood, as well as, you know, concerns I might have for the overall city. And so what I'm wondering is, could you provide an overview for folks? I think we in the council have talked about this a little before. We are probably going to have a lot of questions, but what are the most significant changes in either the types of zoning or specific, maybe not specific, but areas of the city that would be most impacted by changes in this draft as currently written? In other words, some specific neighborhoods. You know, we talked about the Triangle area and then Northern El Camino Real in particular.
Yes. And I think I'd be a bit shy about using the word impacted, but there are areas that are being proposed to change a little bit. And in fact, I have some detailed maps I can go through and show you some close-up images. I'm going to start by just really quickly, just to help answer that question. All of these different colors here, this is our sort of description of all of the zones, starting with the rural and then the highest density multifamily in those brown and beige colors. And then, of course, the more red colors and purple colors for mixed use and downtown mixed use. But let's take a look at a couple of those areas. For example, North El Camino Real. There's an area here around San Benito Road, just south of Del Rio and north of San Anselmo on the easterly side of El Camino Real that today is rural residential. It's our lowest density residential, yet it's along an arterial road. It has wastewater service, it has sewer service, and is directly across the street from an area that is zoned essentially industrial. It's commercial park. So that zoning is sort of a opposite of what a typical city plan would want to see. This is where you would want to see a higher density along an arterial road. This is where you would want to see additional services and additional things happening. So that is a pretty substantial change from what's there today. Now, does that mean that area is going to change in the next 5 or 10 years? Not likely, because it's already developed out with single family homes. It's under separate ownerships. And these things would have to evolve very, very slowly. There already is apartments being built north of San Benito Road, the Emerald Ridge Apartments. And so this is simply continuing a similar zoning to the south of that. So there's one area. The other thing that's changing a little bit in multiple areas is this innovation / flex zone. And that's the bluish or purplish color up there you see. And that essentially that replaces what today is either commercial service or commercial park. And some of the areas that are under public zoning are also changing to that, because public zoning is more reflective of schools, a fire station, police station. It's very challenging to have a publicly zoned property that's privately owned. So that reflects that change. So that's a distinction.
Before you leave that map, could you go back to that for a sec? Could you explain to the public in particular, you explained the brown, I'll call it brown. Could you explain the orange?
Those two colors are, the brown is a medium density multifamily residential, and the orange color is low density multifamily residential. And the actual number of units per acre would actually be decided by the zoning. But in general, those numbers are 24 units per acre in the medium density residential and 12 units per acre in the low density. 5 to 12 is actually